And we're back.
Welcome to No Direction Beyond, your source for Starfinder's news, reviews, and interviews. And we're a podcast. I'm Alexander Agunis, No Direction's everyman gamer, and I'm joined, as always, by the most intrepid Starfinder this side of the galaxy.
I'm James. I used to write Code Switch.
Yeah, I'm sorry, y'all. I'm a little, like, scrambled. Today is May 25th. It's Memorial Day, and, like, we just had PaizoCon, and I was helping No Direction and Paizo go over everything. So I'm, like, a little bit scattered. I was on three different panels. I'm told that I had the most base transition anybody has ever seen. So when we have all of that coverage up, you should go check it out.
Yeah, y'all did work. That was a real shoestring production on a very tight time crunch.
Absolutely it was, but you know what, we may have done work, but Paizo has also done work for us, the fans of Starfinder. Isn't that right, James?
Yeah, I mean, that's their job.
true. So what I'm referring to specifically is that we don't even have our first like big major rules expansion for Starfinder second edition yet, and we've already have our third playtest class. It's pretty funny.
I'm glad that we're getting playtests with each of them. I feel like that was not always the case in older editions of these games, where they were so much dumbed down from in expectations from what would change on a playtest.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we are going to be talking a bit about the playtest document, our thoughts on the new playtest class, and that's kind of where we're planning on going from here. I'm in sort of like this weird limbo position where, like, I sat with both Dustin Knight and Aras while they're like going over this as like the part of the luminary panel. So, like, I know a fair bit about this class between my own reading and being the moderator on that panel. So I'm actually, more than anything, I'm really excited to hear your take on this, James, because to me, like, the core concept of what the luminary is like the most James Ballad character class concept I've ever heard.
Really?
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it's not what everybody associates you with, but I heavily associate you with your envoy, Mitsuku Hane. I was going to say it wrong, because I always get it mixed up with Hatsune Miku.
You mean the correct one. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Nobody says Hydrox. Everybody says Oreos. I get it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I don't know. Just to me, like, when I think of James and Starfinder, that's the first character that pops into my head. So this, like, this class gives me James vibes as I read it. And I'm curious to see whether or not this class actually gives James vibes to James.
I mean, it gives me vibes. Definitely vibes.
All right. Well, let's share those vibes with everybody. Let's start by briefly going over like the starting statistics for this class. The Luminary is best described as like a martial class that uses occultic magic to sculpt hard light in order to create fantastic magical effects. It's not really a spellcasting class. It gets focused spells, but no proper spellcasting. When I was on the show with Dustin and Aras yesterday, they talked about how if the champion is a martial version of the cleric in Pathfinder, the Luminary is kind of like the martial version of like... their exact word was like maybe like a bard, where like it doesn't have spellcasting like a bard, but it occupies a similar role just with more punch.
Does it have more punch?
I mean, it certainly sounds like you have thoughts and opinions that we'll be going over as we review this class. Mm-hmm. So the Luminary's key attribute is charisma. They get 8 plus their constitution modifier in hit points at each level. And their initial proficiencies are they're trained in perception and fortitude. They're an expert in reflex and will. They're trained in performance in one skill based on their platform, which is like the class path for this class. They're trained in a number of additional skills equal to 5 plus to their intelligence modifier. They're also trained in simple weapons, martial weapons, unarmed strikes, light armor, medium armor, unarmored defense, spell attack modifier, spell DC, and in the Luminary class DC. Did I forget anything, James?
Nope, you got it all.
Great. Do you want to talk a little bit about the opening like class features? I mean, we can skip all the stuff that all the classes have, like ancestry, background, and attribute bonuses and stuff.
Yeah, sure. The first big unique thing is a spotlight, which is a literal spotlight. Manifest it with light, they also go over hard light and holograms, because this class uses both the difference and everything there. But you put it on stuff, and then effects happen in those things. And you can only have one, except when you can have more than one. And that comes up very frequently. There's also durations for them. The durations kind of don't matter, because there's so many things that changes, and the situations that you use spotlights changes a lot by the paths that you choose in the class design for it. So there's a lot of rules up front about what it does and what it doesn't do. And a lot of what it doesn't do gets altered very quickly.
Yeah. So you actually talked about spotlight, and my one thing with this class that I think is really weird, there's like a line in the spotlight ability that, so like the idea is that you're using occultic magic to create like an ongoing hologram around like somebody called a spotlight, right? And like the spotlight talks a little bit about how it can actually like create like visual stimuli, like a shower of rainbow colored cherry blossoms, or like a glowing aura around the person, kind of like they're a sim. That'd be another one, putting a plume bob over their head like a sim. That's funny to me too. Mm-hmm. But the thing that is weird to me is like there's a paragraph that talks about how the spotlight interacts with darkness effects, and like I don't understand, like, it doesn't, is what it says. It's like a really confusing line where it talks about, like, it casts bright light in the space of the target, and bright light is a, like, illumination condition, right? It's, like, a specific, like, game term. But then, like, on the next line, it talks about how it doesn't counteract and isn't counteracted by magical darkness. So, it's bright light that can't get rid of magical darkness, and it doesn't, like... It also, like, magical darkness doesn't stop it, though. So, like, I don't understand how that works.
So, when they refer to, at least in the other versions of these games, counteracted, it means dispelled.
Yeah.
So, like, this could still be active, but it wouldn't be, you wouldn't notice it in magical darkness, because I'm assuming that would take supersedence, because this isn't daylight. It's bright light, right. Not daylight.
Well, so, what it means is that, like,
what it means
also can't turn off magical darkness.
Yeah,
but like, what does that look like? The magical darkness makes the light go away, but the effect still continues is the basic read of how that works.
Yeah,
but so it's a little confusing.
So you could be in the spotlight even if there is magical darkness that's stopping anybody from seeing it.
Yeah,
I mean that's fine.
I feel like there's a better way to word that, but I generally don't really care about that. This is Starfinder. Everybody has like night vision goggles as a level one item anyway, and half the races in the ancestries in the game get like dark vision. So yeah, who cares?
Well, this isn't magical darkness, right? Like magical darkness is something like deeper darkness. That's what you really are concerned about, right?
Yeah. I suppose so. Yeah. Yeah. All right. So let's talk a little bit more about like the major mechanic. So one of the things that the Paizo really talked about when they were giving PaizoCon is that this is kind of like a bard. And so it does that with this mechanic called rolls, right?
Yep. Not bread rolls. they're things that you do that get better. They're kind of like the fighting styles for a soldier.
Right, exactly. So, like, you pick a roll, and your spotlight puts that roll on them. Like, if it shines on them, and hero isn't, I don't think is one of them, but you could be the hero, or you could be like, oh, you're like the horror monster kind of a thing.
I think it's like athlete and a couple others.
Yeah, exactly. And so each roll has like bonuses and penalties that it puts on them. And you basically assign roles to creatures. You get like a list of, there's like a list of like basic roles that every single luminary has. And then you can get more from other abilities and options, most notably, as James said, your platform.
Yep. Also, they get hard light, which is laid out even further. You can make stuff with it. It doesn't look good on inspection, and it doesn't really last unless you do something and then it does.
Yeah, unless you do something and then it does. They're also worthless. They're not worth anything, and they lack any proper function. So, like, I like this ability, but I almost wish that like it could be kind of like a minor ability. It reminds me of like a minor create item spell, right? And yeah. I wish that it was fleshed out a little bit enough so that that's kind of, it's similar to the spotlight for me, because like these abilities, they do stuff, but they don't feel like the rules really tell me why I want this.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the nanosite, right? Like the nanosite could make abilities from, or things from nano machines. This is a similar concept, except toned down.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about the platforms. The class path mechanic for me is always really interesting. Now, platform is like I mentioned, is the class path. And there's several different options that are presented in the book baseline. You have contest, you have fashion, you have music, you have sports, and you have theater. So like contest is like your platform revolves around like video games or trivia or a marathon or even like a gladiatorial thing, like people going head to head with one another. Fashion is you are like a fashionista. It's about clothing and it's about style. It's about presentation of yourself. Music is about singing or performing with like song and dance. And sports is literally you're a sports star. The last one is theater. And this is like you're an actor or you're a poet or some other way of like projecting yourself through like the written word and expression. So each platform has a skill that is associated with it. There is an entry that talks about specifically what your props look like when you make them with the hard light prop ability. There's a bonus feat you get, and there's a list of stagecraft focus spells. There's a focus spell that you automatically get upon selecting the platform. There's an advanced one, and then there's also a greater one. You need higher level feats to access those. The progression is not exactly the same as like a cleric domain in terms of level scaling, but thematically it's very similar to like the focus spells a cleric would get from their domain, or a mystic would get from their connection, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Right. And stage class spells is just this class version of focus spells, right? It's really nothing. If you've played this system, if you've played a mystic, if you've played a witch warper, you know what focus spells are. They just get called a different thing from class to class. Your focus attribute is charisma. You can get more feats from different abilities as you level up. Each new feat that you give adds a focus point to your pool up to 3. And many of the spells work directly with the set of spotlight. And specifically, as James mentioned, basically every focus spell in the book will let you shine a second spotlight in addition to the one that you are currently shining as like your core class ability. So I imagine, James, that this is what you're talking about when you're like, you only get one until you don't.
There's also just class features that do the class feats as well that do that.
Definitely. And then from there, there's a list of feats. Did you see the star maker and its star spotlight focus reaction?
Star maker?
Ability. It's like a third level ability. It's basically like a creature begins its turn, and if they don't have the spotlight, you could use your reaction to shine the spotlight on them.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. I like that.
I think there's like 3 things that do that.
Yeah, there's this class is very much aware of how annoying its action economy could potentially be, I think. And so it's trying really hard, or maybe not its action economy, it's aware of how annoying one target at a time could be. So it's trying really hard to like give you additional spotlights and like let you spread your buffs around.
Yeah, I it is almost afraid of not letting you have a spotlight immediately. A lot of your class feats early on are dedicated to just getting more spotlights on things or moving spotlights. Like, for instance, scene transition, a feat 2. You, 2 actions, once per round, you shift the performance to the next scene, causing everyone's attention to a new star. Stride, cast a roll, set a spotlight.
Yes, exactly.
Match cut. You put a spotlight on yourself and another creature at the same time, and then you strike that creature, and one of you loses a spotlight. Like, there's so many things that are geared to making sure that you have a spotlight and you are able to use the class feature that you have.
Yes, I agree with that. Now, I think one of the things I want to point out is we're recording this episode live on twitch.tv/nodirection. And in our chat, we have Bramble Bear DM asked, can you spotlight a ship during starship combat? That's not really in this playtest document, but from what Paizo has told us about starship combat at PaizoCon, essentially what they've said is that Your starship has battle stations, and you get to choose which battle stations your starship has, and you can give it upgrades that correspond to different class features. So I think that there's probably a decent chance that whatever this class comes in, there's probably going to be an expansion bay to go with it, but that's not in this class because Starship Combat isn't out yet.
Yeah, the ability refers to a creature usually or a thing.
Yeah.
So I gave the example that if it's like a whale, like a ship whale, that's an individual, so you could probably do that.
Yeah, definitely. Now, I was listening, but I was also reading chat. Did you talk about Galactic Superstar? Was that your example when you were talking about the strike and the spotlight bouncing around?
No, that was the feats. That was cut scene transition.
So one of the class's ninth level abilities is called Galactic Superstar, where basically when you have the spotlight shining on yourself, the first strike you do each turn gains a status bonus to its damage roll equal to your charisma, which that's kind of a big deal. That's like a decent size bonus. That's, like
it's like a plus 4 or 5 to that damage.
Easy. Like
it's not gonna be like more than 8 or 9, right? Like it's like 5 or 6.
The game typically caps out around like 6 or 7, depending on how all in you go.
Yeah.
But like status bonuses in Starfinder or this system in general typically don't go much higher than +4. Mm-hmm. So like just adding your charisma as a status bonus is a very large buff. To quote a friend of mine, it's very bigly.
Yeah, I mean it's your charisma modifier, right? So like at that level it is 5. It's cool. Yeah. I mean it's like a smite. It's like thespian smite or something, but you know.
Right. Well, yeah. Now continuing like on with the discussion, you have, you know, a lot of the class features you get beyond that one are mostly just like you've got mastery rank. You've got, you know, your ranks and all of your saving throws go up. The big one that you get after that is called Triple Threat at 19, which is you get another spotlight you can set in addition to your normal spotlight and your Sagecraft spells. You just get another one at level 19. Here's a third spotlight. Enjoy.
Yep. Just here. We're just throwing them out. You get a spotlight and you get a spotlight.
Right. Now, James, do you want to go over with our listeners about the roles and like the types of benefits they can get? Like what exactly do these spotlights do when you shine them on people?
Right. So roles are kind of a combination of, I actually am playing a mesmerist in our Pathfinder game that we're going on right now because mm-hmm. we had some characters move. So a lot of this rings kind of like mesmerist stuff. So mm-hmm. there's some positives and there's some negatives. Action makes somebody faster. Comedy makes a -1 to reflex saves. Drama's a -1 to will saves. Epic makes things dazzled. Horror makes things afraid when you hit them. Irony flips modifiers, like you get a bonus to your worst and a penalty to your best. Romance is a flat -1, which kind of is just the best one here. I'm going to be real. Yeah. And then tragedy, which is a -1 to fortitude saves. So you can put these on yourself or on allies or on opponents based on the spotlight that you're using. And there are things that flip them. So it might seem silly to give yourself a -1 to will saves, but there's abilities that would allow you to flip that to a +1 or a +2.
Yeah, definitely. The bonuses themselves are small, but I think it's worth mentioning that like buffing in Starfinder and Pathfinder second edition is hard. Like there's not a lot of ways to do it. Back when I was writing more infinite content, I was trying to write an infinite version of the Blood Rager based on the class that I loved in first edition. And what made the Blood Rager so much fun was that it had lots of little ways to take these like action gated buffs and apply them to yourselves when you started a rage. Well, I started trying to look for different buffs that I could like reference like specific spells to make this Blood Rager. And I found that like there's almost no spells in the game that give anything that you would call like a numerical bonus or even like a good defensive buff. So in general, like to me, like, oh wow, you're giving people numbers. That's actually kind of a big deal in the system, even though the numbers are pretty small.
Yeah. I mean, that is just part of the design philosophy of these newer editions of games, and that it also can't just be you buffing. Like in a lot of older editions of these games, you have a debuffer and they do enough numerically to make them count as a character, where debuffing is a party-wide affair in 2Es.
Definitely. Now, it sounded like you were saying that like romance was your favorite option, right?
It's not my favorite. It is the best one.
Tell me more. What do you think?
It's a -1 to attack and damage rolls on whatever creature has it. That's good. That's 90% of the game where you're rolling these, because most of these can only be done in combat. There are some that allow you to do it out of combat, and you can actually use your perform as initiative when you put a spotlight on yourself when combat starts. But a flat -1, it's going to be hard to choose anything else.
I definitely think it is the most generically applicable, and it's a little bit weird that the theme for it is romance. Like, being in love makes you worse at hitting things. So like, you're just going to want to like constantly tell enemies that they're in love with you.
Yep.
Like, I think some of the flavor on the rolls and like those specific words are kind of weird, just because like, I get what they're going for. Like, this feels like you're a director and you're trying to cast roles onto people, but like, maybe these specific words like should be changed. I'm not a big fan of romance. The other one, mechanically, I don't care for epic. I think epic is the worst one on the list.
I feel like we have gone through the life cycle of the word epic. I think that as just a literary term, we are kind of past it. It's very cliche.
Yeah, well, I think they're going for epic, like talking about like the epic of Gilgamesh, or like the epic of the Odyssey kind of a thing. That's what they're going for.
The original use of the epic, and not just epic bacon at a restaurant owned by a billionaire. Yeah.
but the problem is that critically hitting someone and making them dazzled for a round, even if that is like a -1 penalty to attack rolls and perception checks, which is good, I have to crit someone for this to work. I guess, like, I mean, to me, this is like I'm only epic when I'm fighting the weakest, littlest guys that I'm most likely to crit.
I will say, because it's a roll and it comes up a lot of times, there's stuff that lets you give rolls as reactions. So somebody crits, you hit them with the reaction, and then they get the bonus of it. Mm-hmm. So like, you can make that happen a little bit easier.
Yeah,
but it's just, you know, if you're talking about wordings, that one's kind of corny, but whatever. It's wording. Like, it's not the biggest deal.
Yeah. Dustin Knight is actually in our chat live with us, and we're getting a reminder that if you have any thoughts on anything that we're going over, you should go to starfinderplaytest.com and submit your feedback, because they're very much listening to feedback for this class, which is good, because I know that James and I have more things to talk about and probably more feedback coming up soon.
Yeah, and this is definitely a work in progress class. That's what these are for.
Now, in our James and I like to talk and like kind of touch base on the things we're going to say. And James, you mentioned that what we're going to talk about next was something that you didn't really care for, right?
Yeah.
All right, I think you should take lead. Let's go.
All right. Well, I mean, it is just the first level feats, because they should have just been part of an ability. If you are at all familiar with versatile performance from the Bard, this is versatile performance as your class feat. That's the first level feats.
Yeah.
That is, you wanted anything else to identify yourself by? No, it is comic relief, dark sarcasm. These are all things that allow you to set a spotlight on yourself. When you set a spotlight, you cast roll and apply your roll to yourself as a free action, and you do various things with that.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them are allowing you to use performance in place of a different skill, which is not very exciting, because your numbers are all pretty flat and you have a lot of skill points anyway.
Yeah.
It's just the cool one here is epic superhero, because it gives you a weird weapon to use, and that's kind of cool. The rest of them are just skill reassignments.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that like, a bardic versatile performance type effect definitely feels like something that should just be part of the core class. But I also like, it's a little bit weird, because all of these feats, like the first level feats that are in the book, they're all like the bonus feats from the different platforms, right? So you get one of these feats for free from your class, and then I guess if you're a human and you take the extra class feat, ancestry feat, then you're this is, you pick one of these guys, so you could have like two. But I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, it's a lot of wording for what is essentially flavor on the same ability, where you just change the qualifiers.
Yeah, I could see that. No, I could see that. I think that they're interesting. Like, I mean,
are they is rolling another skill for two other skills interesting, or is that just something that you expect?
So it would be something I would expect if I was playing Pathfinder first edition. I don't think that there's anything like that substitution in second edition. Although, no, that's not true. There's a couple of different options that'll let you roll recall knowledge for different things. Mm-hmm. So that's a, okay, I can see what you're going for, what you mean.
Yeah. So like it's, I mean, once again, it is fine. I think it's numerically fine. I think it's mechanically fine. But when I go to the feats and I look for stuff to get excited with when I first start making this class, I see that and it's like, cool. These are just stuff that I have to now not take skill points in because I'm going to be able to ignore them.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I wish that they were a little bit... I wish that, like, you had an option at level one that just let you, like, use performance for, like, specific abilities and have that listed instead of a bonus feat, and then make these feats a little bit more interesting and let the character pick. Because one of the things that is my big thing that I've seen, like, you know, kind of glancing through and listening, if you're like a rogue, you get a first level rogue feat, and like that's one of the big ways you define your class, you know, yourself from other people with that same, you know, build, the same specialization or whatever. And I think it's called a racket if you're a rogue. I digress. I feel like every first level character that is a luminary is exactly the same, because you pick your platform. And yeah, you could be different for having different platforms, but every theater luminary is the same. Every contest luminary is the same. And I really think that, like, trying to take those feats and make them a bit more broad, and like that you actually have a choice so that every theater luminary isn't exactly the same is good. Like, I mean, for example, if you're a theater luminary and like, yeah, like the traditional theater is like, you know, William Shakespeare or whatnot, like the tragedy, but like it's all theater is also heavily associated with comedy, right? So like the fact that every theater luminary has to specialize in tragedy, and then when you get your first option to pick a different feat at level two, you already have a new bucket of feats to pick from, all of them which are by design significantly stronger than the level one feats, because level one feats are designed to be able to be taken by humans as like an ancestry feat, which ancestry feats are higher power than skill feats but lower power than class feats. So like the jump in power immediately makes it effectively that you're always going to be the same. Like, yeah, no one's going to take another one of these level one feats instead of a level two feat.
Yeah. And I'm just like looking over, as I was looking over feats and stuff, I was just wondering why this is kind of sound kind of rude at first, but why would you pick this class except if you like the idea of it? Like, what role would you be filling up to level five that another class that already exists isn't doing?
Yeah. Now, can you go in? So tell me more about what you're thinking about that.
Well, that description of it is like an envoy or a bard, but does more damage. Those damage things, like in general, don't come online until later. The first one that I saw that is close is Hardlight Squib, which is a fourth level feat, which does bleed, persistent bleed, which is cool. It's not a huge damage spike. It's persistent damage. Mm-hmm. It's nice. A lot of those damaging abilities come halfway through the class. And by that point, 10th level, you are running out of material that Starfinder will make for you, because they don't do adventures very high. So a lot of the identity of when this gets cool is past when you're going to get support for it.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Like, because of the choice to focus on lower level adventures, you are really making the first 10 levels of every class super important, because that's where most of your players are going to be. Everything else is aspirational.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying by that. And I also think that I think an argument could be made, if you were going to compare this to the bard, that most of the bard's like abilities to do bardic performances are occult cantrips, right? Which cantrips are things that you can do at will all day, every day. Like that's what the bard version of Inspire Courage is. Or if you're an envoy, their ability to like to do the lead by example abilities are things that you get to do as much as you want all day during your combat. But because this is a focus point class, most of these really cool abilities are limited to 3 per combat. And that's even assuming that you get the 10 minutes to refocus after every combat, which you really can't be guaranteed. You know, you probably will. It's very likely, but not guaranteed. And I agree with you that with the spotlight is cool, but it doesn't really do anything that you wouldn't get from other places, like
other support oriented classes.
Yeah, yeah. No, I see what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down. Yeah,
we're gonna go through the class a little bit more. I am not saying the vision of the class is bad. I think there's a lot of things that identify a luminary as a luminary at your table. If you want to play it for role-playing reasons, totally valid. It'll be adequate at buffing and debuffing. If you want to build it with medium armor proficiency, cool. That's a niche that you are probably going to be unique in. Because I think in Starfinder, a lot of things are either heavy or light, and medium's kind of overdone, or overlooked. Yeah. But like, if you're looking to why you should play this class, if it's not for that vision, which once again is very good, there's a lot of good theming to the class. It's just mechanically, from somebody who's a little more mechanically oriented, it's just like, this is a lot of rules and a lot of jump through for a pretty average level of bite.
That is a really good point, because if you are playing an envoy, you don't have to specifically choose which person, like, turn to turn is getting your lead by example ability, right? It just happens when you activate the ability, the lead by example triggers. Or if you're playing a bard, you don't have to choose exactly which of your allies get that bonus to their roles. It just happens to everybody in range. Whereas with this one, you have the extra cognitive load of having to bounce the spotlight around. It is a cool, thematic, interesting mechanic, and it really works with the class's vision and feature, but it is an extra cognitive load, and the benefit that you get from it is kind of small. I would agree with that. Those penalties are big in Starfinder, like you said, because the
when added to other people.
Yeah, when added to other people. Yeah, I agree. So I think maybe I'm you know what, you're starting to make me come around, and like, I see what you're saying, what you're putting down. You know, it's one of the things that they mentioned on PaizoCon yesterday was that there was like a lot of people who were like, yeah, this is great, this is awesome. And then like, there were people who like had more of a, and I think maybe like that's where this lives. Maybe this lives in like the space where if you love the flavor, you love the flavor regardless of the strength of the mechanics. And if you're somebody who's looking to build a character and you're looking for the more mechanical parts of tabletop role playing, then I think you're probably right, James. I think that this class is a lot of work for not a ton of payoff.
Yeah. And it's not necessarily the action economy either, because there's a lot of options that you could choose to really to really spice up that action economy and really make it so that you have spotlights whenever you want. But now you are not thinking in how you play the game. You're thinking about how you play your ability and how that matches the game, right?
Yeah.
It's like if you use World of Warcraft, for example, the old Moonkin system where you're going back and forth, or the Solarian system even from 1E, where sometimes you had to step back and go, where am I in phasing? What's happening here? Can I continue this way? You know?
Okay. Well, I think we've discussed this a while. Are you ready to move on and look at some more feats?
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now going from beyond, obviously we have second level all the way up to 20th level feats. There's a ton. Do you want to each take a couple and talk about things that we liked?
Sure. I'll start with the first one. The first one was Hard Light Familiar. That was the first feat that I saw and I went, that's cool.
Yeah.
You use your hard light and you get a familiar.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I would want from this class. That is great theming, and that is a bonus that is good and works. It's weird because once again you don't really cast spells, so you don't benefit from familiar spell casting, but it's cool to have it.
Yeah. I really liked the scene transition ability. I thought that I in generally like abilities that play with the action economy in a way where they kind of amount to just taking one more action than you spent activating the ability. And so 2 actions, stride, cast a roll, and set a spotlight, I think is pretty cool, especially if your goal is to like get behind cover and like set up your buffs. And so, because like you don't want to be just sitting out in getting shot. So I like that one.
Yeah. Going up the list, character supporting actor. Once every 10 minutes, an ally in the spotlight is about to begin its turn. The creature can trigger it and get a quickened condition for a round that they can only use to stride or strike. It's more action economy shenanigans, and it's part of that, along with Hardlight Squib, that you start to see that damage that they're talking about.
Yeah.
Not a lot of damage, but there is extra damage there.
In terms of roles that I really like I like the 6-level feat contrasting. I'm going to butcher this word, James, so please spare the everybody in chat. It's the Chiasakuro. I'm not sure how to say that word. I don't know if that's a guess. Your guess is as good as mine. If you're right,
like,
I buy it.
It sounds like a Brazilian steakhouse. Hold on, what is this?
It sounds like a Brazilian.
Chiaroscuro. Oh, Chiaroscuro. Sorry, I am. I don't know. I don't know art.
Oh, that's fair. I've never seen that word before. Now, Chiaroscuro is a role that when you put it on somebody, if they were invisible, they become concealed instead. And if they were concealed for any other reason, they're no longer concealed. It basically fairy fires them. I like that. That's cool. Like, to be honest with you, that's something I would expect a spotlight to do.
Yeah.
It's weird that it takes till level 6.
Yeah, it's cool. So yeah, I was thinking of Churrasco, which is like a Portuguese grilled meat.
Yeah.
But yeah, as a Cine Warlock said, Curasquero. It's a the thespian term, or it's
nice
ARPA term, something like that.
Very nice. Another one for you?
Sure. Sculpt Hardlight. You gain the spell. I just like that because you gain a spell.
Yeah.
That's
Is that the first one you gain at level 6?
No.
I mean, besides the base one that you get from your platform, of course.
So there's a whole list of focus spells that you can, that come from other levels, 1, 4, and 6.
Yeah.
So you do, and also some at like 3 and stuff, but yeah, it looks like they come through the feet. Yeah.
And yeah.
It's just like, you get it through a feat. Here's a spell through a feat. And I don't know how I felt about that. I feel like with the rest of the options, I probably don't feel that bad about it, especially when it's something like Sculpt Hardlight, something that when you're doing it, you probably can rest and take that time to get that back for when you need the rest of them to actually participate. But it fulfills the role of, hey, you can make that Hardlight thing. Like, when I think Hardlight, this is very specific, but there's a section in the original Halo where you are trying to get across a chasm and you have to take Cortana to make a hard light bridge to drive your Warthog across. And that's when I saw hard light and saw that initially you couldn't do that. I'm like, this is nonsense. Why am I here?
Yeah. I thought costume was pretty fun under costume wardrobe. It says that creatures with the roll they get like a costume from your spotlight and they get resistance equal to 2 plus your charisma modifier against 1 physical or energy damage type because of the costume. And then as your performance rank increases, the bonus goes up by 2. Essentially, it's 4 plus if you're an expert, 6 plus if you're a master, so on. That's just funny.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
I wish that you got that sooner.
Yeah. Trope deconstruction is an 8th level feat that allows you to switch the bonus or penalty from the spotlight that you're in. So you cast roll, selecting comedy, drama, irony, whatever. If the roll usually gives a creature a status penalty, instead grants a status bonus and vice versa. So you can take that -1 to hit and damage and deconstruct it so it's +1 to hit and damage.
Yeah.
Which, once again, is just, I think, at 8th level, maybe not as good, but still just numerically good. Also, Sponsored Ad Break is just a great title. That's a great
title. I love Sponsored Ad Break. That one is my favorite, like, name-wise. I think that one's just funny.
I like Critically Stagehand as far as name-wise, but yeah, they're both good.
I also really like Take 5. you turn off the spotlight, and then the target who's in your spotlight has to make a will-saving throw, a willing target can choose to fail. They disappear on a failure and then they reappear in the same location one round later, which is pretty funny to me. It says the creature doesn't experience any of the intervening time and any effects on the creature with a duration don't decrease, resuming when the creature reappears in the same spotlight. I feel like this is trying to essentially be like, do you remember the old Oracle ability from 1E where like that target ceases to exist and they get tucked outside of reality for like a minute or whatever before they come back?
Yeah. Or the other past Starfinder abilities that classes that have abilities like this. Yes.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like that's what Take Five is trying to be, but like disappearing on a failure does not convey that you can't be targeted information. Like that could just mean you're invisible without telling me you're invisible. I think it needs to be cleaned up a little bit, but assuming it makes you stop existing for a couple seconds until the commercial is over or whatever, that I think that one's good.
Okay. But why is it good? When do you use
because that? It's funny just to make someone go away.
Is it that high of a level worth it?
Yeah, because assuming, well, again, like, I think as written, no, but assuming that it makes someone completely untargetable and they're just gone, yeah. I mean, I can think of tons of situations where I've been in games where, like, there's a civilian we've got to rescue. Hey, guess what? They're gone, and now we can get into position for when they come back. Like, there's power in making it so that someone is completely untargetable, in my opinion.
Yeah. I think that's kind of the only situation where those abilities matter. It's like, I need to survive the nuclear blast. Here's my fridge. otherwise, if you try to use it like proactively at a party, it takes away a party member from contributing.
That's true. That's a good point. So it sounds like you think that it's too specific and too much of a niche and isn't a very strong, helpful ability.
Yeah, I think that in every iteration of this thing that has existed since 3.5.
That's fair.
This is a vintage classic feature slash spell of you just unwrite somebody for 6 seconds and then they come back and they're like, what happened? Oh, nothing happened. I didn't perceive time.
That's definitely a funny way to say that. Yeah. Now, the 20th level feats, you've got Effortless Superstar and The World's is a Stage are the two options that we have here. What did you think of the 20th level feats?
I'm going to be real. I didn't look at them.
That's fair. You did mention that most games don't last that long, and it's not really where Paizo supports. So I get you.
Yeah, I didn't. This was my anniversary weekend, hence why I didn't do PaizoCon. So I was like, I'm not going to read stuff that is not going to be pertinent for 98% of the player base.
Yeah. So I think Effortless Superstar is essentially it's something we've seen a lot. You're permanently quickened. You can only use that action to do insert list of things that your class wants to do. Right? Extra action. Cool. And then World's a Stage says once per day, you can cast any occult spell of 8th level or lower as an innate spell. It's basically occult miracle, but without a reality revision is the name in Starfinder. But it's not reality revision because you can't do any of the crazy powerful stuff. It's just the 8th level version of the ability, which I don't know if a once per day 8th level spell at 20th level is that good. I'm going to be real, especially because this ability does not clarify whether or not I'm assuming that your occult spell attack roll and stuff works with this. I think it gives you a cult spell attack roll. I don't remember if I read that in the focus spell abilities. Let's see. I'm going to scroll back and look because now I have a question.
Oh.
It says you become trained in spell attacks and spell DCs. So yeah, you're trained in that. So you're fine. Assuming that you continue to improve throughout the class, I haven't read all of those abilities. I'm gonna be real. The 50 billion features that tell me my proficiencies are the least interesting part of a Starfinder class to me. I don't typically read them in depth when we're doing these.
Yeah, you try to look out for standouts, but yeah, it is just kind of becomes noise when you're trying to get through stuff because we get stuff less than a week before it comes out.
We do. True. Based. Now let's talk a bit about the last thing that was in this, the mini bots. Did you see the mini bots?
I mean, there's the spells, right?
Nah, they're gear that you can buy.
The StarCraft spell, the StarCraft spells.
I guess we kind of talked about them as part of the feats, though, didn't we? Do you have more you want to say?
Yeah, because they gave access to them, but they actually, you know, there's some that are
okay. Pretty, all right, let's read the spells. We'll save the little squawk spot for later.
Yeah, because that there's two things there. It's not a lot of meat there. For the contestant one, on the first level, fine, whatever skill stuff. The fourth one, focus four, the second spell that you get is this amazing themed spell of Wheel of Superstars.
Yeah, that spell is really cool.
This is amazing. I like this. The heighten is nice. This is fun. Not all the bonuses are great, but that doesn't matter. It's fine. Most of them are fun enough. And then that one after that at focus six, the one you get less, summon a friend. If you fail a check, you try again with a +2. But I get all this for focus four. This is cool. This is fun. I get a reroll as a focus spell with a bonus.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
I was like, what else is this going to give? Yeah, the first one was kind of mid. The second one's cool. What's the third? Third one's just a reroll. Okay, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't, like, I get that it's trying to be phone a friend, mm-hmm. right? That's what it's trying to be.
Yeah.
But phone a friend as a sixth level speed thing, I agree with you. That's like the wheel is so cool. Yeah. Like,
I think you flop them and you just make wheel stronger.
Yeah.
Once again, the theming for that is great. The idea of what, nobody has told me our framing is wrong. I am almost touching Alex.
Oh, you're almost touching me. Why would you? Don't do that.
Because I messed up the border and nobody mentioned to me. That's fine.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Put that away.
Fashion has a couple, they're mostly based around movements, like strutting and stuff, which is totally on brand. Great theming. I don't actually care about how strong they are. The theming of that is good. I don't care about that. Music, Diva, I saw a healing one and went, this one's fine, I guess. I don't think it's great, but it's fine. And the Grand Crescendo is kind of cool. It's actually a sonic damaging, which kind of gives you an actual spell and some damage, which is nice. Comes a little late, but good. Sports player, I think, is great. I like seeing RPG people acknowledge sports and not in a hand egg way, because that is so cringe. I'm gonna be real. You're 45 years old. You know what football is. You have kids that might be in it. like right that it exists. It's not antithesis to you. This isn't 1985. So I think that these are fun enough and respectful enough to the idea of sports.
So my thought is, like, I wish Diva had as many options for what kind of diva you were as the Wheel of Superstars has. Like, because, like, I get, like, oh, your voice is so beautiful, it like brings people relief, but, like, what if I'm a heavy metal, like, musician? I also don't like the name Diva being the spell in general, because music is so broad. If I'm a guitar player and I'm like a hard rocking guitar player, I don't think I want to be a diva. I think so Starfinder loves its pun names. Mm-hmm. Starfinder loves to make like references to the real world, and it loves to be very like teehee about it, right? I think that the music one, because of how broad music is, this is a place where they're trying to cultivate a specific vibe, and the category, the platform is much larger than the vibe they're trying to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't care how like big someone like when I think of a diva, that conjures a very specific kind of musician into my mind.
Yeah, Whitney Houston.
Yeah, it conjures like Whitney Houston, Taylor Swift, I would probably put in the diva category. But like, you're talking about other musicians who can reach those level of stardom and fame, who I would not call a diva. Like, you know, pretty much everybody knows who Fallout is, but I wouldn't call the lead singer of Fallout Boy a diva, like, especially not in how he acts and whatnot. Like, I think diva is like a personality trait as much as it is like a status. So I definitely think I would challenge that, like, all of these focus spells, like the level one that you get, should be as cool and variable and thematic as Wheel of Superstars. Like, is my thought. Like, I know that, like, a lot of these, like, a lot of them start with an ability that sets the spotlight as the level one, like lead actor for theater. You set the spotlight that doesn't move from that target. They gain the lead actor role for the duration of the spell. And, like, that's cool. It's a very small bonus, but then you have the amazing mechanic, like, in terms of both the mechanics and, like, just what it does. Like, I know that first level focus spells can't be super strong. Like, they're first level focus spells. I almost would want to see the first level spell be a cantrip so that you could scale it and then have something cool and then make the other ones focus spells. I would be more interested in that personally.
Yeah. I will say the sports one, I think that one actually has the best power creep or power increases as you go along with the most interest in it. I don't know. It just works. They nailed that one on the head.
Yeah. That is the good one. Yeah. I agree.
I mean, I think there's good parts of other ones. Some of them are a lot, like the theater one, Focus 4. It kind of is like Wheel. You get a lot more choices. It is just a lot.
Yeah.
You have to write that on a character sheet if you're like me, and that's a paragraph.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is what it is, right?
Yeah. So, and then, like James mentioned, the its document ends with like a couple of mini bots. There's like an action for how to use them. The bots are important to the Luminary because they do things like allow you to be streaming for the abilities that require a stream, that kind of thing. And they are actually legal in society play right now for anybody to buy. If you want either the camera bot or the pet bot, you are allowed to buy them. Enjoy. Now, I think that brings us to basically the end. We've kind of reviewed and given our thoughts on this class, and we're at like the 50 minute mark, give or take, at this point. So I think at this point, James, we got to talk about what our final thoughts on the Luminary are. Would you like to go first, or would you like me to go first?
Sure, you can go first. I'll go first, actually.
All right, you go first.
Yeah, I am glad that this is in playtest, and that there's plenty that can change. I think the vision of it is good. I think it's great, even. I think it's just something where the amount of reading and note-taking they have to do for these abilities matches what you're getting from them. Also, if this was not Starfinder 2nd Edition, this wouldn't be a spellcaster. It's only because in the 2nd Edition system, everything has to be spells for some reason. Like, if these abilities were like nanosite abilities, they would just be supernatural and extraordinary, right?
Yeah.
It's like you use occult magic, it's like you have to use occult magic because everything supernatural magic has to be one of the four, basically, right?
So I guess for me, we know that living holograms are coming out. Like, they talked about living holograms being like a playable ancestry in tech core. And I would want to know if every living hologram is inherently occultic. Because if hard light as a concept is inherently occult, then I would understand why this class uses the occult magic the way that it does, right? Because you wouldn't be able to have the spotlight that does its thing, like the hard light stuff. If living holograms are not inherently occultic, then I do not understand why this class is, to answer what you're thinking of.
Yeah, I think it's just because in the system, everything magical has to have an origin and you have to give it something. Also, that is wild. Imagine if there was just a type of adventurer who went around and made effects out of flesh, just like people flesh, and just sometimes made them real enough. And then there's a living hologram. Isn't that horrifying for that being?
isn't that what a bloat mage was in Pathfinder First Edition?
I don't think so. I think they just filled with blood and got really gross. But it kind of like. Yeah, if you have like a living hologram and you have this thing that is just making holograms, kind of weird, right? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's not.
I guess it depends if you understand that you're an artificial constructed humanoid. Like, does an android think that other robots are weird and the construction of robots are weird?
I don't know. Well, robots have or androids have souls, right? So
yeah.
Maybe.
So would a hard light player character, but like the things that they're making don't. I think that's a really interesting question. Can the gingerbread man scream? Is his house made out of him, or is he made out of house?
Also, I do want to ask, do you know of any hard light creatures and beings in fiction?
Isn't the AI in Halo a hard light one, or is she just a projection?
She's just a projection for most of it.
Okay. Then off the top of my head, the Crystal Gem, Steven Universe.
Okay. That is okay, because I go to one. And the one that I have is such a terrible reference for a character. It's Arnold Rimmer from Red Dwarf.
Oh, okay.
Have you ever seen Red Dwarf? It's an old British show in the 80s. He's basically a layabout, a suck up. He dies through his own negligence and is one of the lucky people, only person to come back as a hard light hologram of himself 3 million years in the future.
Wow.
And he doesn't learn anything. And he's not really hard light because he can't really interact with things, but he's hard enough to see through. But he is a being. And it's just like, if you're going to make a whole species based off Arnold Rimmer, they'd be so incredibly annoying that I think you would just get rid of them on site. You would just throw them out. Just get rid of them.
That's funny. now you have me curious, because I'm pretty sure that living holograms were a thing in in first edition. Like, I don't think that they're new. Yeah, I'm looking it up now. I think they were an enemy type, right? Yeah, they were a type of enemy. They were not magical. They have, so this living hologram is from Alien Archive 3. They had the incorporeal and technological subtypes. It is tethered, can't move more than 100 feet from its projector. So I guess the question is, do the holograms in Tech Core have projectors?
Oh, they were an Ancestry in 1E. I just don't remember them.
Yeah, I don't remember them either. Ancestry.
Oh, I mean, I don't, did it come late?
They must have been added way at the end. I'd have to check and figure it out. Now,
your final thoughts, sorry.
Yeah, so my final thoughts is I love the flavor of this class. I think that it is a really cool idea for a class. Aras and Dustin like went through a huge list of different like characters from fiction that they felt would make good luminaries, and just seeing how many different characters that you could really go through and say, like, from Jem in the Holograms to Vox from Has-Been Hotel to this or that, like, there's a lot of different characters who like have that performing bent and like a little bit of magic to it, that it feels really good. And I like that about this class. Sometimes we get things where like the class makes me go, okay, but like, who is this supposed to be? Is this just a pile of mechanics, or is this like an actual like archetypal hero? And so I think that the Luminary checks that box. I think that for all the talk that this class is a martial character, the only real martial thing it does is strikes just like everyone else and adds a charisma bonus to their damage. I don't like that. I think that it feels like it's much more of a combat buffer with how the spotlight works. And I think that if the goal is to make it feel like the champion of like a bards, essentially, then it needs to have more of a martial touch to it. I also think that a lot of the abilities are complicated without much benefit for being complicated. Like, if you want to talk about a class in the second edition system that's complicated, the first one that I always go to is the psychic. And the psychic has like three different like altered states. Like, it's got a mental archetype and like how you're tethered, and it's like a focus point heavy class with a cult spell casting and three different ways to balance and so many things to juggle. I had a friend who was playing one at a table in a game I was running, and I never knew what the heck he was doing half the time. And I feel like I understand the Luminary better than that. But I also know that the psychic was like, it wasn't always the most powerful character at the table, but when it did something cool, it did something cool. And I don't know what the cool thing this class is supposed to be doing is, because the spotlight shines, it gives a very small bonus that is for other people, not really like, yeah, I benefit from it, but I'm also using my action to put it on them. So like, mm-hmm. I just like don't know, like I compare a lot of these first level feats that my martial class Luminary is getting to like the barbarian has a first level feat that lets them stride twice and strike at the end of it. That's so much better for this. Now, yeah, not granted, Starfinder doesn't need that because it's a ranged meta, I get that, but like I look at that class, that ability, and I understand that this means that I am getting my butt right up in someone's face and I am hitting them before anybody else can do anything. And like, that's cool. I like that. This class needs something to make me understand that it is a fighter, not a lover. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, also, it's like, those are combat roles, right? So like, these are skill checks. You can use skill checks in combat. These aren't stuff you can do out of combat generally.
Yeah.
I get you. It's like, yeah. I do stuff out of combat and my powers don't work there half the time.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. So I think, what would you, we're coming up on time. We got about 2 minutes left. What would you want to see in a Luminary like update when this class is ready to be released?
I want more hats.
What does that mean?
I don't know. I just want more hats. I want more things that it can, I want it to specialize. It seems like there's a lot that it is trying to do and dip its toes in. And because of that, it is, it feels compromised in that way.
Yeah. I think that the class needs to look at the things it does. And I think that it needs to honestly have better scaling. A lot of the feats, I agree with you, are too niche. They don't really build meaningfully on most of the class's kit. And I actually don't understand what this class is supposed to do other than be like a quirky bard. Like, like, and I say quirky because you know me, I love playing buffers. I love playing support characters. I, you know, we did Reign of Winter. I was the bard, you know, I've played clerics. I've played all sorts of support characters. And like, I look at this and how I'm supposed to like, basically never take my eyes off of anything ever. Like, man, oh man, my ADHD is not going to let me play this class. Like, I'm going to have to be staring and like hyper vigilant at what everybody is doing all the time. And I only get one reaction a turn. So I'm going to be sitting there going, oh my gosh, is this the time to use this ability? This is not the class mechanic for me, even though I love the fantasy.
Understandable. I mean, I do have some context in playing the Mesmerist, because a lot of these things actually kind of work like how a Mesmerist works, and that is, here's something, you're there, and I can flip stuff, and I just have to notice when that happens, et cetera, et cetera. It is a hyper-aware state where you kind of sometimes have to stop a game and say, wait a minute, let me read my triggering conditions and see if this is something I can help you with.
Yeah. But you know what? This class is in playtest. There's still lots of time for us to give feedback and to see lots of changes and improvements. Remember, if you want to give feedback, you should go to Paizo's website. It's starfinderplaytest.com. Submit your feedback after getting a few games in and tell them what you think about it. And like, honestly, I think that telling them why or why not you like want to play this class is also a good thing, because, you know, sure, I'm sure that the designers really want to hear mechanical stuff, but if something about the class makes it so that you are never going to pick this up, then that's something that's interesting data too. Yeah. And if you want to talk with me and James about what we think about this class a little bit more, or you want to share your thoughts with me and James, you could go to nodirectionpodcast.com and click the Discord link and join us on Discord. James and I are always there. Honestly, we could use with a couple more people sending us like pings on Discord and letting us know what things are going on. It's been a little bit quiet this month. Why don't you come on and by and spice it up a bit? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And also the playtest, you don't necessarily have to play. You can always build a character and just say, what do you think of that build as you go along? Anything is helpful.
Absolutely. That's it. We've talked about the Luminary. We are good to go. And so until next time, please go beyond with no direction.